here.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Ruby, and I am here representing the appellants, Leticia Sanchez and April Mina, both in their capacities as co-administratrix of the estate of Deborah Diane Standage, and in the case of Ms. Sanchez, as the parent and next friend of I.S., a minor child. Good morning, Your Honors. The nature of this appeal this morning is an appeal of the June 17, 2016 order of the Northern District of Oklahoma dismissing my client's claims for negligence against Dr. C.E. Ransom and White County Medical Center, who are the appellees here today. As the court is aware, the motion to dismiss that was filed by the appellees was granted on four grounds, one of personal jurisdiction, one of failure to state a claim, one of standing, and one of failure to join a necessary and indispensable party. My argument this morning would be essentially to move through the background and arguments as quickly as possible. Obviously, four different grounds is quite a barrier. But I would point out that the background of this case was, you know, basically that Deborah Standage was in a on her way to Branson with her grandson, minor child I.S., and a friend, Eileen Patsky, when they encountered and had a collision with a gentleman by the name of Goodwin. And Goodwin actually had a longstanding physician-patient relationship that began in 1977 in the state of Arkansas with Dr. Ransom.
Let me focus you a little bit, because you don't have a lot of time.
Yes, thank you very much, Your Honor.
I'm concerned about personal jurisdiction, so maybe you can help me out here. We need to have minimum contacts with the state, and they have to be focused on the defendant's contact with the state. And here, as best I can tell, we have two telephone calls to a pharmacist.
Correct, Your Honor. But I would say that, and I would point the court to the order of the district court that essentially characterizes the contacts as responding to a request. And I would argue that that's just simply not the case. And I would also point the court to the standard here that would be that a district court considering a pretrial motion for lack of personal jurisdiction without conducting an evidentiary hearing, which did not occur here, the plaintiff would need only to make a prima facie showing of personal jurisdiction, and that all factual disputes would be resolved in favor of the plaintiff when determining the sufficiency of the showing.
But you have to come forward with some facts, and the only facts we have here are that the physician to accommodate a patient, a long-term patient in Arkansas who had moved to Oklahoma, made first a call to a pharmacist and then second a call to the pharmacist to assist his former patient. That's it, right?
So I would direct the court. I don't disagree with what the court is saying, but I would simply add to that in the process of changing this prescription, the district court and the appellees, I'm sure, will characterize the change in that prescription as simply an update, as changing something from a name brand to a generic. And that's simply not what happened.
I'll assume with you that's not what happened, that they substituted a different drug. We still have to focus. The Supreme Court has told us we have to focus on the defendant's contacts with the forum state, and whether that shows that the defendant has purposely availed himself to the state, the benefits of the state.
Correct, Your Honor. I would point the court to the facts that are in the record on page 343 and 344 and 240. Those are discovery responses that note that Mr. Goodwin did in fact tell the White County Medical Center that he had moved to Oklahoma in the process.
Is that a contact between the defendant and the state of Oklahoma, or is that a contact between the defendant and the driver, who is a resident of Oklahoma?
Well, it would be a contact with the driver who lives in the state
and
of Oklahoma.
And the Supreme Court has said that the contacts with the resident of the forum state are irrelevant, that we have to look at the contacts of the defendant with the forum state.
Well,
do you disagree with my premise of what the Supreme Court
Well, I disagree in that Kennedy versus Freeman would note that when a doctor purposefully directs the activities at the forum state, that state has a greater interest in deterring what happened here. And in this particular instance, the district court simply decided that the Kennedy versus Freeman case did not apply. And we would argue today that that was a mistake, and that the facts that are present and that are in the record in this case do, in fact, create personal jurisdiction within the state of Oklahoma. And frankly, that, you know, from a policy perspective, I mean, that makes sense, that the state of Oklahoma would have an interest in protecting people that could be damaged based on a prescription of medicine to somebody that lives in Oklahoma. In fact, you know, they would not commit to the fact that it's actually their policy, but they would commit in their, and when I say they, the appellees commit to the fact that it's not a policy, but the general practice is if they receive a request from a patient out of state, they do not respond to that. In fact, they actually refer them to other doctors within that state. So, again, I don't disagree with Your Honor's premise, but I would say that the facts of this case lend themselves to the Kennedy versus Freeman opinion, which specifically was not applied by the district court and was an error.
Do you think Kennedy's still good law after Wallen versus Fior from the United States Supreme Court?
I think Kennedy controls in this case, Your Honor. Admittedly, I'm not familiar with the case that you bring up as the Kennedy case. The next piece to the motion to dismiss is failure to state a claim, and the claim in this case was for negligence. And in this particular instance, the district court applied a summary judgment case in Johnson versus Fine that was actually a decision of the Oklahoma Civil Court of Appeals, not the Oklahoma Supreme Court, which, as stated in our briefs, we would characterize as an outlier as opposed to controlling authority. But even if this court were going to adopt Johnson today, I would direct the court to consider the Wofford opinion that's cited within the Johnson case. That Wofford dealt with the fact that there is a duty of a physician if in their dealings there could be follow-up required. Well, in a relationship that lasted since 1977 with a patient, it would seem that a doctor would understand that a patient did a lot of driving for a living, and he had the same job. Mr. Goodwin had the same job, and there was actually evidence that was put before the district court that talks about the fact that the change in this prescription could render him unconscious, and the fact that you know, when you review the record of this case, it's a little bit astonishing that this change in prescription was simply a matter of course. I mean, Dr. Ransom essentially looked at it and said, "Fine, do what you need to do." And in this instance, with a driver like Mr. Goodwin, to be prescribed medicine that would potentially render him unconscious without more consideration by his doctor. To say that that's not foreseeable I just would disagree with that.
When we're sitting in diversity, are we bound by Johnson?
I would argue that you're not, Your Honor, because a civil court of appeals case is persuasive in nature, not precedential. And the majority of the authority in Oklahoma, frankly, with much less of a standard duty than a physician. The cases that are cited deal with nightclub and bar owners. As a policy, I don't think that this court would agree that a bartender would have more of a duty to the people he serves than a doctor would have to his patients, which essentially would happen here. Now, what could be argued is that we're not talking, I don't represent the patient here. I represent the person that was injured by his patient. So I realize that's what we're dealing with, but at the end of the day, the precedential authority in Oklahoma would require that there would be a duty here. And again, I would point to the fact that, in this particular instance, the cases that are relied upon were decided upon summary judgment with the ability to dispute facts. That didn't happen here. This was a motion to dismiss that was summarily granted without a hearing. And so that is definitely a distinguishing factor, even if this court were to apply the Johnson case. And moving quickly through the four grounds, I would draw the attention of the court to the order of the Northern District with respect to standing. That order is not supported in any manner by any sort of legal authority. Frankly, it essentially states that because there was no duty, there was no standing. And clearly, I believe and argue today that there was a duty. I would point the court to the Tuffy's decision that is set forth in our briefing. With respect to failure to join indispensable parties, I would draw the court to the district court's order in that Rule 19 requires, you know, quite a demonstration of facts for a Rule 19A in determining whether or not a party is necessary. The court is required to receive information on three factors that I won't waste the court's time in setting forth each one of them. They're set forth in our briefs, but none of those are discussed in the order, and frankly, they weren't argued at the district court. In that Rule 19B, I would draw the court's attention to the fact that there's a four-factor test that must be followed that, again, the district court's order did not discuss, and it was never discussed in any briefing to that point. So if there, obviously, we are here today to argue that district court's order be overturned and remanded, in this case be remanded. I see that I have some time left, if I could respectfully request that
reserved
in rebuttal. Thank you.
Counsel, we're ready to hear you. If you'll move along, please. Thank you.
I'm coming.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. I'm Edward Main with the firm Secrest Hill, Butler & Secrest. I'm here on behalf of the Appellees, Dr. C.E. Ransom, Jr., and White County Medical Center, and we request the Court to affirm the order and judgment of the United States District Court for the Northern District of Oklahoma, which dismissed plaintiffs' claims against the Appellees for lack of minimum contacts, for failure to state a claim upon which relief may be granted, for lack of standing, and for failure to join an indispensable party. And I would point out that if the court affirms on any one of those four grounds, then the order of the United States District Court must be affirmed, because any one of those grounds is sufficient to require the dismissal of the claims against Dr. Ransom and White County Medical Center.
Let's start with personal jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Aren't we bound by Kennedy, and is Kennedy on point here?
Well, Kennedy is not on point because in Kennedy, the Texas physician established a physician-patient relationship with a patient who at all times was located in Oklahoma. The patient in Oklahoma went to her local physician. The local physician excised the lesion and sent it to Dr. Freeman in Texas. The plaintiff, Kennedy, never left Oklahoma. If there was a physician-patient relationship between Dr. Freeman and Kennedy, it was because Dr. Freeman accepted an agreement to render treatment and services to an Oklahoma patient. In this case, as counsel for the appellants acknowledged, there was a lifelong physician-patient relationship between Mr. Goodwin and Dr. Ransom, which went back to the year of Mr. Goodwin's birth. Dr. Ransom was his family physician throughout his life up until approximately less than 3 months before the accident upon which this claim is based. Mr. Goodwin last saw Dr. Ransom May 10, 2013 at White County Medical Center. At that time, Mr. Goodwin still identified himself as a resident of Arkansas. At all times when Dr. Ransom treated Mr. Goodwin, he was treating an Arkansas resident. 2.5 months later, on July 25, 2013, White County Medical Center received a telephone call from Mr. Goodwin, and Mr. Goodwin was claiming that his insurer would not accept the brand name drug Dr. Ransom had prescribed for him and requested that his drug be changed to a generic drug. That information was passed on to Dr. Ransom. Dr. Ransom changed the prescription to a generic drug and sent it back. Unlike the situation in Kennedy versus Freeman, no new diagnosis was rendered.
But it was actually a change in drugs, because it wasn't the generic for the drug he was on. It was actually a generic for a different drug.
It was a different generic drug, but Dr. Ransom did not receive any new medical health care information. He did not receive any additional information about Mr. Goodwin's condition. His change in prescription was based entirely upon his knowledge and records of Mr. Goodwin that went back through his lifetime. He already had an established physician-patient relationship with Mr. Goodwin before the telephone call. And as the Oklahoma Supreme Court recognized in Vance versus Molina, because of that existing physician-patient relationship, Dr. Ransom was ethically obligated to provide some sort of follow-up care or be charged with abandoning his patient. It wasn't Dr. Ransom's choice to render care to someone who had moved to Oklahoma. That was the choice of Mr. Goodwin. Mr. Goodwin moved to Oklahoma, not Dr. Ransom. It wasn't Dr. Ransom's choice to change the prescription. Mr. Goodwin requested the change. And Dr. Ransom...
Well, it was the doctor's choice as to, whether it was advisable, and two, what drug that should be prescribed when he's changing prescription.
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Ransom chose what new drug to prescribe that would be generic and would satisfy the insurer. But that new prescription was based entirely upon his records and his knowledge and his examinations of Mr. Goodwin, which had occurred previously in Arkansas when Mr. Goodwin was an Arkansas citizen and resident. So it was entirely based upon the Arkansas contacts and the fact that the request came by telephone from Oklahoma does not show that Dr. Ransom or White County Medical Center were reaching out to Oklahoma as a place in which to practice medicine or to render health care services. But it was his choice what medicine to prescribe, yes, Your Honor. Now, so Kennedy versus Freeman would not be controlling because it's distinguishable on the facts. Vance versus Molina is appropriate because it addresses this appropriate kind of situation. In fact, the situation in this case is even stronger than it was in Vance versus Molina.
But
because
Vance is Oklahoma, right?
Pardon?
Vance is Oklahoma.
Vance is an Oklahoma Supreme Court case.
This is a federal question, isn't it?
It's also a question of because this is a diversity case, it's also a question of whether the state court would exercise personal jurisdiction. And in this case, Vance versus Molina, as an opinion of the Oklahoma Supreme Court, would be binding upon a state court in Oklahoma and would answer the question of whether a state court in this diversity action could answer personal jurisdiction.
Right. And if you were in state court, that would be very helpful.
We started out in state court, Your Honor.
Yeah.
We went round and round in state court.
For our purposes, we're looking at, because Oklahoma's long arm is to the same extent as the federal due process clause,
mm-hmm.
we are applying the federal due process clause, correct?
Yeah. The Oklahoma Supreme Court opinion would not be controlling authority on the interpretation of the due process clause under the federal constitution. That is correct. But I would still submit that the analysis of the Oklahoma Supreme Court is persuasive authority of how those principles should apply in this particular kind of situation, that the decision of this court in Kennedy versus Freeman is distinguishable and therefore not controlling, and furthermore, as argued in the brief, that the decision in Vance versus Molina is consistent with the holding of the United States Supreme Court in the classic case of Hansen versus Dankla, where you also had a party who moved from the original state to another state. In that case, it was a trust situation where the trust store moved from Pennsylvania to Florida, and then there was communications back and forth about the administration of the trust. And the United States Supreme Court held that there was no jurisdiction in Florida over the Pennsylvania trust. Similarly, in this case, we had a physician-patient relationship which was grounded and was overwhelmingly based in Arkansas. And the mere fact that Mr. Goodwin moved to Oklahoma and made a telephone call for a revision of his prescription to satisfy his insurer should not be sufficient to satisfy minimum contacts in Oklahoma under that U.S. Supreme Court authority.
Maybe we should move to failure to state a claim before you run out of time.
Yes, Your Honor.
How persuasive is Johnson when it's an intermediate court of appeals from Oklahoma?
Johnson, as a decision of an intermediate court of appeals, is persuasive, not precedential. However, it is entirely in accord with controlling precedent of the Oklahoma Supreme Court in the case of Wofford versus Eastern State Hospital. It's cited in our brief. And in that case, the Oklahoma Supreme Court created a limited exception to the common law duty that a physician, the Oklahoma Supreme Court endorsed the basic principle that a physician does not owe a duty to a third-party plaintiff against the physician's patient. The Oklahoma Supreme Court created a limited exception that found that a psychiatrist, this is what the court actually said, we hold that a psychiatrist has a duty to exercise reasonable professional care in the discharge of mental patients. The professional standard of care must take into consideration the uncertainty which accompanies psychiatric analysis. This duty arises only when, in accordance with the standards of his profession, the therapist knows or should know that his patient's dangerous propensities present an unreasonable risk of harm to others. Well, that was a very limited exception That was a very limited exception, and it was limited to the psychiatrist psychotherapist relation, and it required knowledge by the therapist that the patient, a mental patient, had expressed threats of violence against another person. The Johnson versus Fine decision is a very limited extension of that very limited exception. And in Johnson versus Fine, the court held that the defendant's physician did not owe a duty to the plaintiffs in that case. Now, the cases cited by the appellants in this case are not controlling because, first of all, they cite Briggins versus Velvet Dove, which is a dram shop case, and that case was entirely based upon the sale of alcoholic beverages to a person who had already become noticeably intoxicated. Now, the noticeably intoxicated is important because, similar to Wofford versus Eastern State Hospital, we have a person with a diminished mental capacity, which is known or knowable to the server. Dr. Ransom did not dispense any drugs on premises. Dr. Ransom, White County Medical Center, did not dispense any drugs on premises. There was nothing to indicate that Mr. Goodwin was under any sort of incapacity at the time he made his telephone call. So the Briggins dram shop analogy is inapplicable. The Deldrell case involved a repair to an automobile. Well, the duty to repair an automobile would be owed to any person occupying the vehicle and does not depend upon, I'm running out of time. May I finish my statement?
You'll finish the statement, please.
The duty to repair an automobile would be owed to any occupant of the vehicle and does not depend upon the mental capacity of the operator or the driver, and thus it's also inapplicable to a situation where they're claiming that the prescription prescribed by Dr. Ransom is inappropriate for and somehow is causally related to the underlying accident.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking for the time to complete your thought. Counsel, where are you here?
Briefly, Your Honor. Your Honor, I see I have 3 minutes remaining. I don't intend to use all of it other than to respond to questions as necessary. But
it's your time. You're free to use it.
But I would, and I appreciate that, I would point out that, you know, essentially, the major distinguishing factor when we're speaking of jurisdiction and the Kennedy versus the Vance case is that the Vance case stood for the fact that the treatment that was given was ancillary, okay? And Kennedy was the actual treatment. Well, when you treat high blood pressure, the treatment is the medicine. This is not ancillary. To say that the real distinguishing factor between Kennedy and Vance versus Molina is that there was a longstanding relationship in Arkansas, and in Kennedy, the patient was always a resident of Oklahoma. That is not the basic distinguishing factor between the two cases, and frankly, is not a jurisdictionally significant question, because the fact remains and the record reflects that Mr. Goodwin called White County Medical Center and expressed the fact that he moved to Oklahoma. He said that. It was responded to in discovery at the district court level, or at the lower court level, that he had moved to Oklahoma. They also responded with the fact that when that happens, their general practice is to not treat that patient anymore. So to say that Vance versus Molina distinguishes based on the fact that the length of of relationship is not jurisdictionally significant, in my opinion. With respect to, and I'll speak briefly on this, with respect to failure to state a claim, it's true that the cases that are cited in our brief deal with dram shop, and they deal with the ability to repair a car and the zone of danger and the foreseeability and the creation of a duty to a third party. But I would ask this court to really step back and think about what
counsel,
we're saying.
Counsel, I think, makes a persuasive argument that it isn't the fact that they're dram shop cases, but the fact that there is a foreseeability element in those cases that are missing in your case.
And my only argument with that would be that we say that this doctor had a longstanding relationship with this patient. It goes back to the 1970s. And that he drove for a living for TASC. That was part of his job. And so when you're going to change a prescription, the record reflects that the change in prescription should have, as a standard of care, understood that the medicine could render him unconscious and therefore be a danger to people on the road. So essentially, when we start talking about dram shop and repairing a car, well, when we change the prescription of medicine to the driver, how is that any different? I see my time is up. I thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I compliment both counsel for how well you know your cases and the related cases that are required and precedential for our consideration. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Counsel are excused.